You will get money when you are successful, not that you are having money and you'll get success. There are a lot of people, billionaires, who think they're successful. Everybody thinks, but they're not, because they're not happy. So you have to be really thinking what makes you happy, what makes you really exciting, and then choose that profession. And then once you really put your whole heart and start involving yourself curiously, you will automatically start attracting people, attracting wealth. At the same time, you will be successful and people will call you, "Hey, you're a great success."
Hello, and welcome to another edition of State of Readiness. I'm your host, Joseph Paris. Today, my guest is Sanjeev Kot, Director of Global Product Quality for Cummins Incorporated's Filtration Business Unit. Sanjeev is a highly accomplished senior executive with global experience in manufacturing, quality assuredness, and operations management, who specializes in building highly motivated teams focused on achieving results, customer satisfaction, and business growth. He is a results-oriented pragmatist, an enthusiastic, proactive, and energetic professional that is always seeking new possibilities and new ways of doing things, and thrives in an environment that focuses on growing globally and is full of change and challenge. Welcome, Sanjeev. Great to have you on my podcast today. How are you doing?
Thank you, Joseph. I'm doing great. Thank you for the opportunity and speaking to your audience.
Yeah, today. It's my pleasure. I've been following your professional journey for some time there at Cummins Filtration business, and your sharings and your engagement, of course, on LinkedIn. And you're interesting enough for me to want to invite you and have a conversation and share it with my audience. So thanks for taking the time.
Thank you again. Thanks. Yeah, it's a pleasure meeting you.
So, how did Sanjeev get to be Sanjeev?
Yeah, so it's a long journey. Started with a lot of interesting stories that shaped up my overall path. So Sanjeev, actually, I've started my journey from India, and I saw people working for manufacturing, were growing, and they were very much living a very good lifestyle. So at some point, I was thinking, I should be that kind of person who will really influence, at the same time impact the livelihood of people through manufacturing. That's how I took an interest, and I studied engineering and then moved into manufacturing industry. And then here I am after 25 years of experience within manufacturing industry, and lots of insight, lots of learning, lots of mistakes I've done. However, all these have shaped up who I am today, and there have been great mentors like yourself. Your book was one of the great mentors to me, because it shaped up how I think about operation excellence, how I think about manufacturing, how I think about quality. So there are a lot of mentors who have shaped up who I am today. So thanks.
So in India, where did you grow up?
I'm from city called, probably it is the south of India called Belgaum. I'm from that city, but which is near to Pune. Pune is a famous city, so a lot of folks know it. So I did my initial education in Belgaum, and then moved to Mumbai for my education, higher education. I did studies there and then moved to Pune. And then I started in Mumbai and then moved to Pune, and then that's how, the interest in manufacturing, because there are a lot of industries, automobile industries in Pune. And I was very fascinated to live there. And there were a few friends who invited me. And then once I saw the city and the kind of culture, really it attracted my, overall growth path. And then this, one of my friends suggested, "Hey, why don't you think of coming? Because Mumbai is crowded area, so much of travel using local trains was not that great. And also I was taking almost 2 to 3 hours every day to go to my job and then come back. So it was almost 5 hours waste in just traveling. And then one of my friend who was in Pune, who was taking only 30 minutes to go to office and then coming back. So I was like, man, I can save almost maybe more than 4 hours per day. So I can use that for my development, education, so many things that I'm wasting there in Mumbai. So that's how I got a job in Pune through my friend and then moved to Pune. And then I lived in Pune for almost 10 years there. And then I got an opportunity to work with Cummins. I joined Cummins in central part of India called Madhya Pradesh, where they manufacture all the turbochargers over there. So they were coming up with a new plant. And that's how I landed into that job. I got, again, almost my journey has been through all friends and relationship I built throughout the year. So everybody really helped me and I also helped them. And that's how I moved to Indore. And I lived in for, 7 years. I was a kind of operations leader and then taking care of plant quality over there as a plant quality manager, and took another global job as a black belt. And it was a Six Sigma black belt. That was a very, high time where everybody wanted to be a black belt, understand stats, how to apply those stats into manufacturing. Then moved to Pune as a global black belt for Cummins. And then I took some global, big black belt project, how the overall organization is working, what kind of processes, what kind of challenges the organization is facing. So I did that for 2 years and then became a business quality leader because one of my VP asked me, hey, you've done such a great job in black belt. Why don't you come and then join me here in the business and then lead the quality leader for all three plants? So that's how I accepted as a quality leader over there. And then I was working with so many global, customers, global leadership. So that's how, there was one of our, global operations leader was there in India, was visiting, was trying to really understand what I'm doing and then how things are moving in quality. So they saw a lot of great progress and they asked me, hey, why don't you come and work for us in the US because we have some challenges here. That's how, in 2015, I decided, okay, let me do something and then started building my network and then started building my own growth path and then established great connections. And then in 2017, I moved to the US. And in the US, I joined as a plant quality leader for one of the big plant where we are remanufacturing turbochargers, all kind of component. And that's where I was part of that. And then after 3 years of working there, I wanted to do something bigger than a small plant. So then there was an opportunity in filtration business for overall supplier quality. And one of the global director who was there and he said, hey, just try and see if you are interested in this kind of job. And then I looked at the profile. I saw, oh, everything matches almost 99% of what what the job description was. I'm already qualified for that. I said, yeah, I can do this job very well. So only I was lacking is the global perspective for that kind of role with supplier quality. Other than that, everything was good. Then I applied, I got selected. And then I did that role for almost 3 years. We really made almost 95% improvement in our quality metrics for almost supplier quality. We influenced a lot of global suppliers. And last 5 months, I'm working as a global product quality. So again, they expanded my role. So now I am leading product quality for the filtration business globally. So we have 10 manufacturing plants. So whole supplier is also with me, APQP of, all the improvement areas. At the same time, I also have a bigger reliability team. So this is the bigger part of overall understanding all the manufacturing processes, suppliers, your product development, as well as your warranty and customers. Thinking overall business, it's a great opportunity to learn again and then contribute for the organization. That's where I am, Sanjeev.
Well, that's a heck of a journey there, Sanjeev. I found it kind of humorous that you although that you came from India, they thought that you lacked global experience. So I thought that was kind of funny. So how about the supply chain? Have you had some challenges in supply chain in the last couple of years? This is now, 2022, almost the tail end of 2022. Have you had any supply chain challenges that that not only were the deliveries perhaps challenged, but the quality within those deliveries. Because what I've seen is that people were trying so hard to catch up that sometimes quality dropped.
You're right. Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of challenges we faced, again, in my supplier quality leader role, as well as even in current role as a product quality leader. I think one of the big challenges during COVID was how do we get parts and also good quality parts from suppliers, because every plant was shut down and there was no labor available. And then, but the demand was going up and up. And then also travel restriction was not there. So you cannot go and then really work with suppliers and then make them, you know, work. So there were a lot of challenges that we faced. So one of the big challenge was labor shortage. Second, the supply chain disruption through all kind of, you know, because drivers were not available, inflation was going up. And then also business continuity, you know, some of the suppliers got bankrupted during that period. And now you have to move almost all the tooling from X supplier to Y supplier and then make sure that you build those parts on time and deliver to your plants. So those were some of the challenges. And another biggest challenge we faced was we were not allowed to travel and we are not auditing suppliers. So we have to come up with something new so that we go at least virtually audit suppliers, because as part of our quality job is to go and see and make sure if there is an issue, how do you know the corrective action is effective? So one of the big thing is, you know, then we come up with a lot of digital tools using, you know, artificial intelligence, ER, you know, augmented reality tools that you can, you know, we ask supply, we ship those tool to suppliers. We ask them to wear them and say, hey, show me your process, how things are. Then on using our computers, we used to do an audit, asking those questions and really going in deep, but it was 80% effective. But that's how, you know, we have overcome some of those challenges. And for labor shortage, you know, we worked with a lot of contingency folks, as well as, you know, there were a lot of HR issues as well. And we had to really overcome all those challenges because people don't want to come for work. So we have to really give them incentive. We have to give them more and more attractive wages. So those were all challenges. And from a quality side, I would say in spite of having all these challenges, our team was really capable of handling these suppliers. So, you know, sometimes they work maybe 10, 12 hours, but we ensured that there are very minimal disruptions to our plants. But there were disruptions because of supply continuity issues, delivery issues, quality issues. However, gradually, you know, it improved. And now we are in much better shape that we are now started visiting suppliers and we have much more, you know, close connection. And it is improved a lot as compared to where we started in 2019.
So how much, it sounded like during COVID and your countermeasures to the disruptions in the supply chain and the quality issues, it sounds like your quality measures relied a lot on digitization and digitalization. You know, the remote go and see, if you will, the Gemba walks, you know, virtual Gemba walks. How much of that is surviving post-COVID?
Yeah, so we still have lots of digital tools to be used, but we are no more using that AR tool for audits because now you can visit supplier, you can go and see. But imagine you want to do an audit, you know, in Japan and you have to do it from the US. Still, those tools are applicable because rather than traveling and then visiting that supplier, even I can ask one of my supplier person wear that tool or maybe ask some of my regional team from Korea or Japan to go there. And then we hear that, but sitting in computer, sitting here in the US, virtually I can go and do an audit, right? So I can ask that person, hey, these are my concerns, and then go and see and then help me understand. So get videos, photos, whatever you want. And we are still using those tools, but as and when, but locally within the US, even we can travel to Mexico, right. We can travel. So those things are now minimized. However, a lot of, again, because of COVID, a lot of interesting, you know, we could find out so many opportunities to be effective, right? We were really driving, traveling a lot, and then also wasting too much of money from the company. So now you need to be very careful about, okay, which meetings you really want to go in person, which meetings you can take it like via Zoom. So
Right. Because
you don't have to. And then also one of the great advantage, me being a global leader, was instead of going and then calling everyone for the meeting in person, it was so easy to connect through Zoom and then have the dialogues, discussion, workshop, everything virtually. And then also it was even as good as in-person meetings. So we were used to release minutes of meeting and then go and talk to people, understand what is going on, and also having one-on-one with everyone. We never thought that, you know, we'll be using such a, you know, huge virtual tools, but now they become the norm. So now we are using so many tools. We have started using Power BI more effectively to get all the dashboards from global plants. We started using a lot of data from suppliers virtually, like Zoom calls as well as virtual audits. And we started using, you know, some of our plants have lots of data. They're all in siloed. So we connected all the databases and see, hey, where we can get those data and then really do analytics so that we can work on bigger problems and challenges. So now people are more data centric, you know, as compared to what they were about 2019.
So it sounds to me like obviously COVID was very disruptive for you as for everybody else on the planet. And you quickly adapted some, digital tools to augment the lack of being able to go on site and, you know, go see, as you said. But it also sounds like post-COVID, those digital countermeasures are going to have a role going forward. It almost sounds like it's a bit of a first line of defense. And if the results of that digital review, that digital go and see, are not satisfactory, that you're going to go on site and you know, do a real Gemba walk.
You're right. Yeah. So it all boils down to, you know, again, level of confidence. And like you said, the first level of defense, normally we don't go and then visit all suppliers. We always think about, okay, what is their performance? How they are doing, and then what is our confidence level based on the last, you know, 6 months to a year performance to see whether they are really stable or there's one-off issues. And then if at all you don't see those things are still not working, then there is a need for a person to go and then visit them. Yes.
Okay. So one of your passions is zero defect. What are some of the tools and techniques, you know, what is your strategy for getting to zero defect?
Yeah, great question. Thank you for that. So zero defect, again, is a goal, right? You know, practically, sometimes people say zero defect is possible, not possible, because there are a lot of debates I had with people. But think about like a Six Sigma company, right? So 3 PPM is what we talk in millions, right? So that's what we call it. How do you become a Six Sigma company or zero defect company? So to me, zero defects is possible and it is achievable, provided you have a very good focus in terms of identifying risks and then mitigating risks using proper planning and execution. So,
okay. Oh, go on, sorry.
Okay. So another thing, to me, zero defect is basically, you know, understand your customer requirement and make sure that, you know, all those requirements are translated into your product design and process design in order to meet those requirements. And also go, like you said, Gemba is very, very important for me to have a zero defect. It is not possible to really, you know, sit and design and virtually you think everything will be okay and then you will design and deliver the product. You have to go see act. You have to really understand customer's application, customer requirement, and what could be the worst case scenarios, you know, in terms of temperature, the environment they will be using your products. At the same time, understanding your own processes within manufacturing. because manufacturing has got so many variations. You have material variations, people variation, people come and go. Material, there are supply changes or your own tool changes within manufacturing, right? And then there are so many variations. If you understand those variations and try to minimize, like we talk about SPC, right? Process capability. If your processes are capable with CPK 1.67 or BPK 1.33, we say, yeah, this process is going to deliver the result of Six Sigma company. So understanding those requirement, and there are some processes where you cannot measure variable data. You have to say pass, fail, right? How do we understand the capability, right? So you need to have right data in order to see whether people are trained. First of all, you need to have proper process, right? Is there a good process for anything that you are doing? And second is it capable? Is it capable? When it calls capable, you have to understand your customer requirement, what are your tolerances, and then also make sure that it is meeting your customer requirement. And the third question you need to ask is the people who are involved in that process, are they trained? Are they really trained? And do you have an evidence to show, yeah, they're trained and they understand the process and product requirement? The last question is, okay, show me the evidence, right? What is the effectiveness of? Are they effective? So is there a process? Is it capable? Are people trained? You know, and then are they following the process as mentioned? So once you follow these four paths, you'll be able to really understand whether the process or the, you know, overall program is delivering zero defect or not. So that's how, you know, I approach the problem, and that's how I focus on zero defects.
So obviously, the closer you get to zero defects, you know, the more investment, the more, you know, the more capital it might take in order to ensure zero defects. So where's the tipping point? You know, I think about, like, if Toyota were to make the perfect car, it was perfect in every way, nobody would be able to afford it.
You agree. Yeah.
Okay. So where do we, you know, where do we approach zero defect, but where do we say, you know, close enough is good enough? I mean, this is a very pragmatic. I mean, one of the things that I like about you is you're a very pragmatic individual. So, I don't know if you golf, but, you know, there's a reason that the hole on the golf course is bigger than the golf ball, because close enough is good enough. I mean, I wish mine was about a meter in diameter, but, you know, we got a little bit. So where do you think the trade-off is, the cutoff point?
Yeah, so it always comes back to the kind of risk, like you said, trade-off, right? You need to understand, you cannot, because as you go on increasing quality, your cost will also go up, right? So you need to be thinking about, okay, at what point you are going to say, yeah, this will really meet my customer requirement. We don't have to worry about it. So there is a strategy that you can use for achieving this. One, you know, we use different tools. So one of the tool is PFMEA, and then also go back and see your prevention and detection. So think about you have a process, and if your process is not delivering the intended result, or it is not delivering the required quality, and even you have got 100 issues, for example, right? So out of which you need to prioritize where you need to focus on, where you want to fail safe the process, where you still think, hey, manual is fine, and then where you think, yeah, these are not of priority or not of importance because we don't want to invest in this particular area. So for me is understanding what are your risks and what you can say, yeah, let go, or what you can say, yeah, no, these are not, these are the issues that we are not going to let go to our customers, but I will put additional manpower for inspection or additional fail-safe for inspection, or I have another detection maybe after 10 processes from now. So I don't have to invest here, because anyway, I'm going to do a functional test over there and I'll catch those defects. So don't spend too much money on doing everything in one process. Understand your end-to-end supply chain. For example, some supplier I'll give an example, right? How do you think in terms of zero defect? If there is a supplier who needs to really invest, say, for example, $2 million, and that the purpose of that investment is to make sure that he prevent the defect at his premises. And also, but if it, that part comes to my plant, and then I already have a failsafe inbuilt for that kind of parameter, I can really detect it here. So first thing is, do you really need that investment of $2 million there versus, you know, can I really add another 25K and then make sure that this particular issue is captured? And however, I have some kind of defense mechanism in my supplier place. So thinking end to end and then finding where you can really prevent or detect that, that's how you will be able to, you know, really reduce your cost at the same time achieve zero defect.
So what about, value in the eyes of the customer? I'm thinking about a video that I saw some years ago, and it was at an airport in Japan. And there was a young lady as the bags were coming off the conveyor to the people, she would pick up the bag and wipe down one side of it. And the bag would continue on its, you know, journey to the passenger. And I was interested in it because a lot of the remarks that people were making were saying how great customer service that is. Okay. And I was thinking, I don't care. All right. I mean, you know, that woman and her activity is costing. All right. And if that person wasn't there doing it, nobody would notice. Because she was, you know, she's adding a cost. And it looks like she might be adding to the quality of the product, but nobody cares. And so, you know, when we're looking at quality issues, I think it's also important not just to make sure of no defects, but also make sure that the measures that we're putting in place, the customer is willing to pay for. Right? What are your thoughts on that?
No, very good point. I agree. I think it's all about adding value to customers, right? So if customer is getting that value and you think that is going to really help your customers, then add those failsafe. Like you mentioned, one side wiping is not going to have that kind of, you know, customer anyway. Like you said, you are the customer. You said, I don't care, because anyway, it doesn't matter. And then if they're unnecessarily adding cost, that is also. And then instead of that, I would ask, maybe I'll put some kind of, anti-disinfectant papers in the end and ask customer, hey, pick one and then wipe if you want, right? So it's rather than adding that cost, I would add, ultimately you'll achieve better quality because it all customer, whoever is concerned will use that and then get the quality. Whoever is not concerned, it doesn't use it, right? So thinking about the value to the customer, you have to design processes rather than adding costs, like you mentioned.
Right. So what I'm getting out of this conversation there, Sanjeev, is that it's really a collaborative effort. It's a partnership between you and your customer and you and your suppliers. I mean, everybody, you know, you have to get understand from your customer what's important, what's not important, what would satisfy them, what wouldn't satisfy them, what they see as no value. The same with your vendors. You know, your vendors might be incurring costs that you don't perceive a value of receiving. So it's really what I'm hearing is that it's a collaborative effort amongst all the members of the value chain.
Absolutely. It's absolutely. And then, you know, when one cannot run without the other person. So it's always like, you know, body-mind connection. Your mind will not work without body, and without, your mind, your body will not work without mind. So it's always the collaborative effort and then teamwork, right? How do you bring the right kind of experts in a room or in a particular area where you really need to do that investment, and then understanding pros and cons? But most of the investments, even sometimes in manufacturing organization, we just go and, hey, Drew, we are going to solve this problem, but without talking to the operator who is going to use that process. So in that process, in that particular case, there's an example. If your company is going to invest lots of money to improve a process, is always go and talk to your operators who are going to use that product or the process, because they will be able to help you reduce your cost and also bring much more, you know, different ideas that will reduce cost and save a lot of time and effort.
Yeah. So we've talked about a lot of things that we'd like to do and we need to do. What are the challenges? What are some of the things that get in your way?
Yeah, so a lot of challenges, by the way. Like I mentioned, so challenges are always there. And then I always keep telling this to even everyone, saying that, you know, challenges are there. That's why we exist, right? If there are no challenges, why people need people, right? People need because there are challenges. And that's how, you know, you have to be more creative. You have to be really very, very, you know, forward-looking. At the same time, collaborative in terms of understanding. Again, they talk about, You really have to wear the shoes of your customer or your whoever the person that you will be serving, and then walk a mile so that you understand the pain, right? So to me, again, there are a lot of challenges when it comes to, you know, our current quality. One is there are a lot of issues coming in because labor shortage is spiking up every day. Or, you know, if you see last 6 months, or maybe last 3 years, you'll say everybody's struggling with labor because nobody wants to come and work for manufacturing, because even McDonald's is paying as good as manufacturing, even better than manufacturing. So people say, hey, why should I go and then work, right? So you have to really be very attractive and then also pull that labor. And then that is not only one challenge. That is not only the one challenge. You already know that manufacturing processes, products, understanding your customer requirements, there are so many things that person need to understand before they start doing their job. So you have to invest time in terms of bringing those people on board and then also help make them understand. And then third, you also need to think what is the best case to use your investment to support that particular person. If you just leave everything on the operator, you know that, you know, initially the operator may say, yeah, oh, okay, I will start working. I know everything. But after 8 hours or 6 hours of working, the fatigue, tiredness, the focus will not be there. So you have to think all those things. That is another challenge, right? How do you make sure that people are really excited to work? Another, okay, this comes only the labor side, right? Coming on to your customer and supply chain, right? There are no parts available on time because of chips, because of so many issues. There was, you know, last year, you remember, there was an issue in Texas gas, and then, you know, they had to shut down because of the, you know, bad weather. And a lot of our supplier didn't supply parts to our plants, and we have to really find alternate sources, material deviations. You have to see and check with engineering whether that material is okay, what customer is talks, you know, thinking about it, and then getting those approvals is another challenge, right? Because all these are going to add more and more cost to the company, and then suppliers started raising their particular prices because everybody said, yeah, we don't have labor and we have to pay more. So you have to be ready to really give them more price increase. And then also you have to pass on that to your customer. So that is another challenge, whether customers say, hey, no, this is too early and we just did. So, I mean, there's so many challenges. And then also from a quality point of view, I think one of the big challenge that we always, you know, face is bringing everybody together and then agreeing on the solutions that make sense in terms of delivering good quality products. And if there is a complex problem and you have to deal with, and you have to involve all the team members, you have to make sure that because of COVID, somebody is sick, someone is not available, the experts is on vacation, something. So you have to really wait and then also try to do whatever you can in those moments to protect the customer and then do the permanent solution later on. So there are so many challenges. I can go on, you know, on and on and on.
So what are your, you know, there's near infinite number of quality tools available, right? I mean, we named a couple of them here. Gemba is one that we talked about a couple of times. What are your, like, say, what are your three most favorite quality tools and why?
Okay, great question. So my favorite, I always use Pareto principle, 80-20. Mm-hmm. You know, And that tool works phenomenally well in almost all kind of analysis, problem solving, and then tackling any of the issues, be it the manufacturing issue, quality issue, you know, or a design or a customer issue. So why? Because you cannot work on every problem that you are facing. And then as a global company, we have so many plans, so many projects, so many issues that comes on. You always need to prioritize because of limited resources. So if I want to assign a resource for a particular issue, okay, be it a supplier or a customer, I need to know what is the most valuable thing I'm going to get using these resources and which problem I need to tackle first. So that's where I use Pareto principle. And another big tool I always use is, you know, painter chart, or, you know, kind of eye chart. You know, it will tell me how many occurrences have happened and when, whether the issue is fixed or not fixed. So I use it very effectively to see whether my previous issue, that whatever I have fixed for my customer, are they really effective? Or I'm again, you know, using our resources and time and energy again and again for the same issues, because we have some repeat issues. People go and just do all the work in system, but in reality, they have not done anything, you know, or maybe they have done something and but it is not effective, or they did everything that is required, but still you have the issue. Maybe the problem definition is not clear. So the painter chart will help me understand where and how I can use my resources in terms of repeat issues. Okay. And the third one is SPC. SPC is I can use it as a proactive tool, because SPC will not wait for you to give you, hey, this is bad. As you start monitoring the processes, it will tell you whether the trend is going up, going down. And then if you have a trained operator and trained people, they will really react at the same time, fix the issues before it becomes a big issue. So SPC is, again, another big tool. And then I use problem solving. There are so many tools. One is FTA, you know, fault tree analysis, because you can go to the actual event, what happened and whether you fixed or whether you really considered everything or not. So FTA is another tool. And we use Cummins, uses 7 steps. Is a problem solving tool, understanding your problem, prioritizing your possible issues, containing the problem, and then working on the effective solution.
All right. So when I'm lecturing young students at university, I'm on the board of a couple of universities, usually assigned to their industrial and systems engineering departments. And I start off by telling the students that they probably selected the worst possible profession they could possibly select. And they all look at me, you know, kind of stunned that I said that. And I said, you know, if you're a carpenter and you're on a job site, at the end of the day, you put your tools away and you go home. Or if you're a mechanic, or if you're a baker, or if you're a programmer, you put your stuff down at the end of the day and you go home. But if you're in quality or industrial engineering, you're going to the grocery store and you're saying, why do they stack the cans that way? Or at the airport and you're saying, why can't they improve the efficiency and the quality of the screening process? You know, our job as process engineers, as systems engineers, never ends. So keeping that in mind, what would you say to encourage people to get into the field?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, world has got a lot of opportunities. Always pick whatever you feel you're going to add value with. So for, like you said, systems or process engineer, if you think you are very good in solving problems, understanding, you know, what is happening, or if you're really good in designing and creativity, innovation, try to pick a, you know, field that you really want to go and then really design a product. But ultimately, you know, we as an engineer are solving world's problems that the world is facing today. So we always, again, if you want to come and, you know, solve some of the manufacturing problems, I think manufacturing is so exciting for me, basically, because you have to deal with everything. You have to deal with people. You have to deal with a lot of cross-functional issues. You have to really understand how you are impacting the bottom line. And then also you always need to think about your customer. And then you have to design processes and product in order to meet those. And there is always an exciting thing, because when you go and solve a problem, there's always a pride, right? You always feel like, wow, this was a problem that, you know, the company was facing for so many months, and now I led this and with team we could solve it and it's not repeating. So those are the pride moments. So to me, I again, if anybody is listening, you would like to really be, first of all, get curious into learning what you want to really do in life, right? Because we always go with this mindset, oh, there is more money, I want to go, and then you choose that field because that's where, you know, my friends are there, they love that kind of, you know, aerospace engineering, or oh, that chemical engineering, or there's a doctor, I want to be a doctor. Just don't go with money. Money will come when you, so I always keep saying this to my network, always saying that you will get money when you are successful, not that you are having money and you'll get success. There are a lot of people, billionaires, who think they're successful, everybody thinks, but they're not, because they're not happy. So you have to be really thinking what makes you happy, what makes you really exciting, and then choose that profession. And then once you really put your whole heart and start involving yourself curiously, you will automatically start attracting people, attracting wealth. At the same time, you will be successful and people will call you, hey, you're a great success.
Great. Well, Sanjeev, thank you for taking the time today to have this conversation. I've really enjoyed it. You've been a wonderful guest and shared some incredibly keen insights that will be invaluable to the audience. I thank you again for taking the time.
Thank you, Joseph. Thanks for inviting, and you know, it was a pleasure talking to you, and have a great day.
You too. Thanks.
Yeah. Bye.
Thank you for listening to State of Readiness. You can discover more episodes and learn about the book written by Joseph Paris of the same title at www.state-of-readiness.com. You can learn more about Joseph Paris at www.josephparis.me/card.